Hello, Kentuckians and other friends, and welcome to My Old Kentucky Podcast. We are back this week with a full episode. Last week, I had a preliminary hearing that lasted till 9 p.m., so I left Robert all by his lonesome, but we are back and ready to talk about some Kentucky politics. Robert, you want to tell us some things that Matt Bevin said this week?
Sure, Jasmine. First of all, it's okay that you left me hanging last week. I was able to pull the show through.
You did.
Yeah, with a 10-minute mini show. So now we're going to have a full episode of stuff to talk about. And it's
a lot has happened.
Yeah, it's a good week to have a full episode. So I didn't really come up with a good name for this segment except for Bevin said, what?
Is this going to be a regular segment?
I hope not. But
I think it has been.
We just
haven't had a name for it.
We did something like this before when we had the whole bloodshed. Yeah. So, okay. There's two Bevin said what moments that happened this week. So the first thing, first part I'm going to call putting the DMs on blast. Jasmine, have you ever had anybody put your DMs on blast?
DMs. That's Twitter direct messages.
Well,
right?
just any kind of direct messages, you know, Facebook messages, you know, your text messages, any sort of personal messages that somebody's put
on. I'm not super down with the internet lingo like you are.
I guess so.
But it took me when you had DMs in the notes, I didn't know what you meant. So now I know.
In the internet parlance, DMs on blast is when somebody publicizes a private message that you sent to them.
Okay, now I know what this is about.
Yeah. Does that ever happen to you, though?
No, I don't think it has.
It happened to me once in high school, and it was very embarrassing.
I bet.
Yeah, somebody wrote my AOL instant messages that I sent to them on their live journal.
Oh, no.
It was brutal.
Well, it happens to everybody, even the governor, apparently.
Yes, so Andy Beshear, frenemy of Matt Bevin. I don't even know if I wanted to call them frenemies. I think they're full-on enemies at this point. On September 26, Matt Bevin apparently sent an unsolicited text message to Andy Beshear, which read, "I would strongly suggest that you get your house in order. Your office is becoming an increasing embarrassment to the Commonwealth."
Ooh.
So that was Andy Beshear publicized this. He took it to the news. The news was like, holy crap, look at this message sent by Governor Bevin. And I think everybody kind of thought that the governor would be like, I didn't do that. No way. He's lying. But pretty much immediately, Governor Bevin was like, yeah, I sent it. And he didn't say the whole message. He left out the first part. And this was kind of a weird kind of back and forth for a while that Matt Bevin was like, he edited the text message. And Andy Beshear was like, it came in two messages. And what ended up happening after some internet Twitter sleuthing, it was discovered that Andy Beshear has a phone that has a 160 character limit, and the first message was the link, and the second message was the embarrassment part. So that was certainly a case of weird misunderstanding due to some, you know, unupdated phones. I hear that.
What kind of phone does he have?
I think that the only phone that has that doesn't have the 160 character limit is if you have OS 10. On an iPhone. I don't have that phone, so I was kind of bewildered by this also. Regardless, okay, the link. Let's talk a little bit about what was in the link, why Governor Bevin is calling Andy Beshear an embarrassment. There was a Medicaid fraud case in Boyle County, which is Danville, central Kentucky. The story is that a grand jury indicted this man who operated an autism services company. The charges were related to Medicaid fraud, but the charges were hastily dropped when it was discovered that a man who works for the Kentucky AG's office had misled the grand jury. He'd said some stuff that maybe wasn't totally true, actually certainly was enough to get the charges thrown out. So the court threw out the indictment, and the man had his charges dismissed. Some good lawyering there by his defense. The AG's office ended up concurring with a dismissal of the suit. Nothing really has been released about what happened to the investigator yet. I found him on LinkedIn today. I'm not gonna put him on blast since you know, he probably has enough to worry about. But you can find him if you really want to. There wasn't a lot there about him. But the texting episode, it ended up getting really ugly. Andy Beshear, you know, made the text public, and after doing so, the governor's office attacked him, said he manipulated the text, and then the Attorney General Beshear, he ended up calling the governor's text nasty and unnecessary. And it was kind of brutal for a couple of days there. Just as a reminder, the governor hired an outside law firm to investigate his father, the former governor.
Right.
Removed his mother from the board of the Kentucky Horse Park, and may probably have removed his mother's name from an education building.
So I definitely think it's safe to say that they are not frenemies. This is full on enemies.
Yeah.
What do you think about Andy Beshear doing that? Do you think he was wrong to publicize that, or
I think it was a good political move. Here's the thing: I think that political maneuvers like this, they only work when they help to enforce a narrative that you're trying to create. And I think that what people kind of think about Matt Bevin is he speaks a little bit too fast. And he's too quick to the trigger, especially when it comes to saying things out in the opens.
Right, the bloodshed of the people.
The bloodshed was one thing. Like, he didn't realize that was being taped. That was a little wild. I mean, I remember last year when there was a video of him walking around in the Capitol. It was like, where's the Democrats? Where's the Democrats? And the Democrats are like, we're over here, you idiot. And
we're in session right now.
And you know, so I think this narrative is emerging that the governor is this kind of guy who he, you know, is a little quick to criticize. And that's a negative story about the governor, a negative narrative about him. And this helps to reinforce that. So I think it was probably a deft political maneuver by Andy Beshear. And I think it helps to reinforce this kind of negative narrative about Governor Bevin that the Democrats kind of want to, in, you know, create around him.
Bad move, Bevin.
Bad move, Bevin. That's a thing, I think. that's got some alliteration there. This ended up being all over the news. It was on all kinds of political talks, not just all the political news. It was everywhere in the political news. But it spread to regular talk shows on all over the state, and also to sports radio. It was all over sports radio, including Matt Jones's show.
Yeah, I heard it
and
on there.
I think it led with his TV show that he just started. I haven't watched it, but I think it was on there too. But this was not the only Bevin said what moment we had this week. So that was DMs on Blast. Part two, I'm calling political churches. So this is kind of interesting. So on September 30th, there was a Facebook page titled Kentuckians Against Matt Bevin, in case you wanted to know where they stood. They posted a video of the governor speaking to a group of pastors in which he appeared to encourage these pastors to be more political from the pulpit. So here's the passage in full. Since 1954, do you know how many churches have lost their tax-exempt status because of political speeches from preaching that has occurred? And then the audience interjects, zero. Praise God. Back to the governor. Zero. The reality is it is an absolute paper tiger, and there is no reason to fear it. There is no reason to be silent, and if you have been exhorted and encouraged to have this boldness and this spirit to be unapologetic, then I would encourage you to do it. So just from a factual standpoint, Governor Bevin is basically right. I did a little research today to try to find some churches that had their tax-exempt status removed. I found an article from the University of Colorado Law Review in 2006, and it said that there were four churches since the adoption of the IRS rules about churches in the 50s, I think, four churches ever having their tax-exempt status revoked. And those were not necessarily from preaching from the pulpit. So essentially right. He's right that this has never occurred before. And it is a little bit of a paper tiger, it seems like. The governor, you know, he's known for support among a certain sect of politically conservative Christians. He's a member at Southeast Christian Church here in Louisville, and he had a special and private inauguration service on the day he was inaugurated at the church. So to me, he draws a lot of political power from that wing of the church. And
he's also, hasn't he appointed a lot of Southeast members to these various boards?
You would know that better than I would, so I'm going to trust you on that. So I think that is right.
I've heard that yeah. He's just appointed, like, a lot of these boards that he's been restructuring, he's appointing friends from Southeast.
Yeah, which, I mean, there's a lot of people that go to Southeast, and there's probably a lot of qualified people that go to Southeast, but yeah, that is a little, you know, that's where his political power lies. There's right. A lot of, that's the people that he goes to find the people that elect him, essentially. So that's probably why he's interested in these churches being more political, but it is certainly illegal, and he called it a paper tiger because it hasn't been enforced before, but it may not be enforced because churches are pretty, you know, you'd think that people in churches are people that follow rules,
right?
Kind of. I mean, I go to church and I think that those we follow the rules, maybe. And that, you know, that could be the reason why it hasn't been enforced, because it hasn't been blatantly broken that often.
Do you know if churches have had penalties, not to go as far as getting tax-exempt status revoked, but IRS penalties for any of this behavior?
That University of Colorado Law Review paper, which we'll put in the show notes, they did have some stuff about enforcement beyond tax-exempt status, you know, some fines and stuff, but that was also very limited.
Right, that's what I figured. And we talked about that a couple weeks ago when we talked about structuring as a 501c3 and how it rarely seems to be enforced.
Right, and Jasmine, you would know this a lot more than I would, but I do not believe that a taxpayer as a citizen has any standing to sue a church if they have believed that there's been a violation of, you know, this kind of speech prohibitions.
That's right.
So it's very difficult to create the enforcement as a private citizen. The IRS essentially has to create the suit, and they have not seen fit to do that often. So, you know, I don't know. Do words mean anything in the state of Kentucky?
I had a law professor one day. We were reading a Supreme Court opinion, and she stopped and said, "Oh, words. Sometimes they mean things, and sometimes they do not."
I think that
that's a quote that's really stuck with me.
I think that that's about right, especially when it comes to politics in the state of Kentucky. There is a long, long history of people saying real crazy stuff and it not really creating a lot of backlash. You know, I think that this all presents opportunities for Democrats. I think that maybe it won't gin up votes in Kentucky, but there's a lot of liberal people who live in Louisville and Lexington who are donors to political causes, and if the right candidate comes around, they'll be able to raise a lot of money off of these types of things. And I think it also creates a narrative among Democrats for somebody that they don't necessarily want to support, and I think that that creates an opening. Now, Democrats in Kentucky obviously are suffering because of some demographic changes that are occurring in the state. The people who live in Kentucky are increasingly Republican. It's becoming easier and easier to predict whether or not you're a Republican based on your race and your income level. And non-college educated white people, which if you've been paying any attention to national politics, that is the greatly increasing Republican demographic, and we have a lot of those in the state of Kentucky. So, you know, the window for Democrats is getting a little bit smaller, but this is, I think, going to help them try to find a way through it. So we'll see what happens. Not a good look as far as My Old Kentucky Podcast is concerned with Matt Bevin, but we'll see if it matters to anybody else.
I'm sure we'll be back next time with Bevin Said What.
Bevin Said What? Okay. Jasmine, tell us about Judge Shepard and his ruling against Matt Bevin.
So this has been a continuing story on My Old Kentucky Podcast from the very beginning. Judge Shepard heard the case with the U of L boards. Can Matt Bevin abolish a board and appoint a new one? It turns out that he cannot do that. And Judge Shepard made a final ruling against the governor, and he stated that his actions were entirely without precedent.
Okay, Jasmine, can you remind me who Judge Shepard is really fast?
Judge Shepard is a judge in Franklin Circuit Court, and that's where this case was heard.
And also several others.
Yes.
Okay.
And so Judge Shepard's opinion stated that assertion of unlimited power during the legislative interim to abolish a board composed of members who can only be removed for cause would completely defeat the protection of board members from partisan political interference for discharging their fiduciary duties. So basically, we talked about how the statute says that members can only be removed for cause after a hearing. Matt Bevin's actions deprive them of a hearing, and Judge Shepard said that he cannot do that and that it was totally unprecedented. Matt Bevin's people have not said whether or not there will be an appeal. They said they want to review the opinion and decide whether or not they're going to appeal.
Okay, pause for a second.
Sure.
Can you give me your odds that there won't be an appeal?
I think that there is an 80% chance of an appeal.
You really think that there's a 20% chance they won't appeal? I think there's a 0% chance. I think there's a 0% chance this isn't going to the Supreme Court.
And so one of Matt Bevin's attorneys stated that they believe that there is an attorney general opinion that's on point that was actually issued by Jack Conway that says that board reorganizations include creation, alteration, or abolition. And so we talked about this on the podcast as well. Attorney general opinions are only persuasive authority. They're not binding mandatory authority that a judge has to follow. I've not read that opinion, But Bevin's attorneys say that that opinion says that abolition of a board is included in the definition of a reorganization. I don't know if that's true or not.
One thing that might be interested, and I talked about this last week when I was all by myself, but the Supreme Court ruled on something having to do with boards. This was the when they changed the funding for boards, which said that, you know, essentially universities are different. University boards are different than all other mechanisms inside the state government.
They are different, and they have a different statute than other state boards as well.
So I don't know if the opinion by Jack Conway necessarily relates to universities.
Right, and I'm not sure either. I haven't read it, but that's what they're relying on. And so here we are. We're back with the old Board of Trustees, but there are several vacancies on the board, and it's Bevin's duty to appoint board members to fill those vacancies. So he does have an opportunity to appoint the board members that he wants to the U of L board, and he hasn't done so yet. But a lot of people have been urging that he follow his duty and use his appointment powers to bring the board to compliance. Judge Shepard mentions this in his opinion, and he stated that the governor has an adequate remedy here, and it's that he use his appointment power to fill these vacancies. I think there's 5 vacancies right now. Andy Beshear and the new U of L Foundation chair also are urging him to fill the vacancies. And the U of L Student Senate also passed a unanimous resolution asking Bevin to bring the board to compliance.
Right.
I don't know. This is a question for you, Robert. You were in student government. What does a student senate's resolution, what weight does that carry?
I think it would be as effective as if the My Old Kentucky podcast board were to pass a resolution saying that the governor should fill these vacancies. I mean, obviously, okay. You know, the students at the university should have a voice. And I believe U of L also has a student board spot.
They do.
And a lot of times those student resolutions are used to hold the student trustee accountable, like to create a position of the students that recommends that the student trustee vote in a certain way, but they're not.
That's what I thought, but it seems like everyone is saying, let's move past this, do your job and appoint these members so this board can get to work and so that the university doesn't have accreditation issues.
Right. The governor feels that he's done his job, right? And he's already created a new board, and that's what he wants to do. So that's probably why he's doing what he's doing. But it seems like he's getting a lot of pushback about that.
Yes, and I definitely, you know, I think that there will be an appeal. But for the time being, that new board cannot meet. Hopefully, Bevin is following that and not having them meet in secret anymore.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know.
Man. Well, we'll see the next steps here.
Right.
Right. So I guess I will talk about hospitals a little bit.
Sure.
Okay. So the Foundation for Healthy Kentucky, which is run, I guess the spokesperson, the person in charge is Ben Chandler. You may know that name is a person who served as the Attorney General in, I guess it was the 90s. I'm getting old.
And then he was a congressman.
He ran for governor in 2003, lost to Ernie Fletcher, ran for Congress in the 6th District, which includes Lexington, won, served there for a good long while, then lost to Andy Barr. And then he needed a job, and he became the leader of the Foundation for a Healthy Kentucky. This is an organization that does a lot around research and looks at the healthcare law in the state of Kentucky. It has a little bit of a liberal bent to it, I guess, a little bit. It's run by Ben Chandler, who, you know, is a Democrat, so take that for what you want. They have come out with a report this week that said that charity care at hospitals is down 77%. So, Jasmine, if I say charity care at hospitals is down 77%, are you like, that's a great item of news? I understand that fully.
Well, my understanding is that charity care would be when you get treated without any insurance and you're not able to pay.
That is impressive. Did you use context clues to come up with that information?
I've heard it before. Thank you very much.
Well, good. I'm impressed. I was thinking that this was completely obtuse to somebody who doesn't work in healthcare every day.
I don't know much more than that. Well, that's all I know about
Perhaps people know healthcare policy better than I give them credit for. I'm impressed with you, Jasmine. I'm sure you walk away from that thinking you're a better person because I am impressed
exactly.
with you.
Exactly. It means so much.
I'm sure it does. So you're exactly right. Charity care, or what is often more often called uncompensated care. care is when someone does not have insurance and cannot pay for their care, and the hospital is provided essentially for free. It was very common before the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare was passed, but now that we have healthcare exchanges, and especially since we have expanded Medicaid, there's almost always some kind of funding mechanism for hospitals to be paid for the care these folks receive. So prior to expanded Medicaid, some hospitals receive what's called DSH payments, which are called disproportionate share hospital payments, which essentially for hospitals that have a disproportionate share of their care that is provided for free, they get a deferment from the federal government. And Obamacare, the ACA, tried to essentially get rid of those types of payments in favor of expanded Medicaid payments or exchange payments. So one thing you need to know about this, though, Medicaid, first of all, different insurance companies pay different amounts for the same exact service. It's all a negotiated payment between the payer and the hospital, and Medicare and Medicaid pay the least of anybody else. Medicare can do that because they have so many patients and essentially a lot of bargaining power, and Medicaid just says, you can either take our money or leave it, and if it restricts the amount of choices that people on Medicaid typically have. But the hospitals think that some money is better than no money, so they like it when people have Medicaid as opposed to not having any insurance at all. So hospitals widely support expanded Medicaid because they like to be paid for when they provide services. So essentially, this report says that there was a huge drop in free care that was provided by hospitals, which lends credence to the idea that expanded Medicaid is a benefit to providers of healthcare. All the way back in our first episode and in a couple of episodes since then, we've talked about expanded Medicaid as a program. There is a waiver in front of the Department of Health and Human Services and the federal government that's seeking to change Kentucky's expanded Medicaid program. One piece of that waiver that is really key here is the retroactive, essentially giving people the ability to sign up for Medicaid retroactively, even though they haven't signed up for it. Let them sign up for it after they've received some care. The waiver says they shouldn't be able to do that because that does not provide them, you know, that's them not keeping up to their responsibilities. But hospitals really like it because if you can retroactively enroll, if you haven't been enrolled yet, the hospital gets paid for a care they provided instead of having to give it for free. So, you know, it isn't really something that the patient would worry about if they weren't enrolled. It's not like they're going to pay, you know, $11,000 for their foot surgery.
Right.
It's just not going to get paid. So the payers are essentially taking a bath if that occurs. So, right. So this has major implications for the Medicaid waiver. If it is not approved by HHS and Governor Bevin says we're going to scrap it, we'll see. The payers probably will not be very happy with that. And that may cause some problems down the road.
I don't think I have any questions for you. All of that made perfect sense.
Yeah, okay. Well, you know, you are more adept at health policy issues than you led me to believe. So there you go. I'm impressed, Jasmine. I am impressed.
You're just really good at breaking it down and making people understand it.
Well, I need to just give you better credit for being a very smart person, I think.
Maybe that too.
Yeah, definitely that. So tell us about Tim Longmire.
Tim Longmire, who's that? He was a Jefferson County prosecutor, and then he became the personnel cabinet secretary while Steve Beshear was governor. Last fall, he resigned from that position to work in the attorney general's office as Andy Beshear's deputy AG, and then he resigned in the spring, just a couple days before some charges were filed against him. So he was charged under the federal bribery statute. What did he do? This was a kickbacks for contracts scheme. Robert, do you know what a kickbacks for contracts scheme is?
I can guess based on context clues. I am not as adept at kickbacks for contract schemes as you are at uncompensated care, but I'm going to guess that Tim Longmire negotiated some contracts, gave them to some of his friends, and received some of that money back.
Right.
Okay.
So he would persuade insurance companies with state contracts to hire this consulting firm, MC Squared, and they would do things like employee satisfaction surveys. One of the insurance companies they worked with was Humana, and then MC Squared kicked back about $200,000 of what was paid by the insurance companies to Longmire, which he then converted into some illegal campaign contributions to Democrats.
Whoops.
So these contributions were what we call straw contributions, and that's a term used for a situation where a contributor is reimbursed for their contribution by someone else to circumvent the legal limit on how much they're allowed to give, which is $1,000 per election in campaigns for Kentucky state offices. So he was reimbursing people to get around that legal limit with this money from this kickback scheme.
So he was getting all this money from MC Squared, who was providing a service that he directed to them sort of illegally. And then he was giving all this money to different people who then gave it to Democratic candidates for office?
Yes.
All right, that sounds bad.
Right, and there was no evidence that either Bashir was aware of any of the illegal activities.
Either Bashir meaning Andy or Steve.
Right, and then there was also a middleman involved, Larry O'Brien, who worked, I think he worked for MC Squared, and he just pled guilty. He hasn't been sentenced yet, so I don't know what his sentence is going to look like. There's also, it's alleged that the owner of MC Squared was also involved, but he hasn't been charged with anything. But Tim Longmire pled guilty on April 19th, and he was just sentenced this past week. He was sentenced to 70 months in a federal prison. He faced somewhere between, the sentencing range was 70 to 87 months under the federal sentencing guidelines. And fun federal sentencing fact, those guidelines are not mandatory. They used to be. The Supreme Court held that it was unconstitutional to make them mandatory, so now they are advisory.
He got the minimum.
Minimum under the guidelines, but since they're only advisory, a judge can sentence him to less or more than that, but they have to explain why they went outside the guidelines. Longmire's attorney asked for 30 months. The prosecutors recommended 70, and the judge went with the prosecutor's recommendation. He's got a little bit of time. He doesn't have to report to federal prison until December 7th, so he has a couple months of freedom. He made a public apology, and he even answered a few questions from reporters after the sentencing. And so this is just pretty bad publicity for the Attorney General's office that's already had some other issues. We talked about the resignation of one of their veteran open meetings attorneys.
This whole situation in Boyle County that caused the text message.
Right, and so...
But this was all first. This all came out before this happened.
This all happened first, and I'm sure Matt Bevin would say that the Bashirs are involved in this, but there, like I said, there's no evidence that either of them were aware of any of the illegal activities. Longmire's kind of taken full responsibility for this, and he apologized to all the hardworking employees that weren't doing anything illegal, that he made things look bad for them.
Sure.
And so he's going to be spending 70 months in federal prison, and his middleman, we don't know how long he's going to be spending in prison, but I guess that will come in a few months.
Yeah. Yeah. And Tim Longmire, too, is a longtime Kentucky and Louisville political kind of guy. He was the chair of the Louisville Metro Democratic Party for
a good long while. He really worked his way up in Kentucky politics.
And seemed to really kind of throw it all away, so don't do that. Don't. Anybody who has the opportunity to do it, don't. Don't do that. That's bad. So sad for Tim Longmire, but he shouldn't have done that, you know, and making people look bad, and we're not quite sure if they should look bad or not, but there's no evidence that either Bashir knew what was going on, so I guess people can believe what they want. Okay, Jasmine, are you ready for some quick hits?
Yes.
Okay, cool. Okay, so the first thing that I wanted to talk about was the Kentucky auditor, Mike Harmon. He issued a report this week that said that money for law enforcement was not spent correctly. Essentially, there is whenever you pay property taxes, there's 1.8% of that is supposed to go towards law enforcement, and that was all just kind of swept into the general fund and spent on whatever the general fund wanted to spend it on, and it should have been spent on law enforcement. There was some evidence that Denny Butler, the House member from the South End in Louisville, was really adamant about this issue, and this may have been the reason why he switched parties, because he really wanted this to be investigated, and it may have been that the auditor Harmon said, I'll investigate this if you switch parties, which is totally fine to do, and he investigated it, and it turned out that there were some issues there. So there you go. We'll see if Mr. Butler gets reelected. Okay, so some federal stuff. Mitch McConnell, who is the Kentucky senior senator in the federal government and the majority leader in the Senate, who is a Republican, there was a bill on the 9/11 folks that wanted to sue Saudi Arabia for their involvement in the attacks on 9/11, 2001, and the law essentially allowed them to sue this sovereign state in U.S. courts. It was vetoed by President Obama, and there was the first override of a presidential veto during the Obama administration, and immediately after the veto was overridden, Mitch McConnell changed his mind and said, oh man, we shouldn't have passed that. There's a lot of problems with the law. I can't believe this has happened. And then said that Barack Obama didn't do a good enough job about telling them why it was bad. So, yeah. I'm just going to leave that as a quick hit because that's all I want to talk about there. So, last thing we want to talk about is the Kentucky GOP and the Democratic Party calling for Dan Johnson, a Bullitt County Republican, to drop out of his House race for some racist Facebook postings he made. This has been in a lot of news. This guy who's running for the Kentucky House in Bullitt County, and I think part of South Louisville, essentially posted some pictures of Barack Obama as a chimpanzee.
Oh no.
Yeah, had a picture of a monkey and said it was an Obama's baby picture. Had a thing, one picture on his Facebook that just said, I heart being white. So that's a thing. Many kudos to both the Kentucky, to the Kentucky Republican Party for calling for this guy to drop out of his race.
That's surprising.
Yeah.
Good for them.
Governor Bevin, wasn't immediate, but did today. This story has been in the news. We're recording this on Monday, but this has been in the news over the weekend. Governor Bevin today said he agreed with the GOP that Mr. Johnson should drop out of the House race. So good on him. Wish he'd have done it faster, but glad he did it. This race wasn't really supposed to be close. The Democrat in the last election won with like 85% of the vote. She's a pretty popular person, so this wasn't supposed to be a close race, but kind of newsworthy because this guy did some really awful stuff. So, yep, that's it for this week.
Bullitt County,
your home.
Yep, I'm from there.
Okay, Jasmine, thanks for a great show this week. I'm glad that you know about charity care.
Yeah.
Better than I know about kickbacks.
No, you got it right.
That's true. Use context clues. Yeah, and so everybody listening, please remember to like us on Facebook, subscribe to our podcast in your podcasting app of choice, including iTunes, read our show notes on Medium, follow us on Twitter. Do we do anything else?
That's good enough, probably.
Okay, well, thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next week.